Chema. Appearances are deceptive. If somebody sees the video that I am sitting with a coat on, they might think that I am in some either a very cold place or winter is there. And both these assumptions will be wrong. When we understand this, that all that our senses show us and all that our mind conceives is inadequate. We construct reality, we do not experience reality. Just the same as I said, seeing something from afar and coming near. Same thing applies to yoga. When we are very far from the divine presence, we think yoga is a set of techniques, tools, methods, because we live in an age of technology. So we expect, if I do this, so many breath works, so many asanas, so many pranayam, so many japas, so many hours of meditation, God will be pleased. This is the modern version of the superstition that if I offer him so much money, he will be swing on our side. It's a modern version. Because it's the age of technology, we think, if we do this, well, it's all right to begin with, but the closer we get to the divine presence, divine reality, divine truth, call it by whatever name, the more we discover that the less we do is better. We allow that to do. The more we discover that methods and techniques and processes, whatever they may have a place when we are far from the divine, they begin to lose their power because there is something else which was drawing us closer, giving us the illusion of effort, of doing this, of doing that. But all the while it was this which was doing. When the divine calls, something in us hears, we run or we take a car, call Uber or whatever. But he who has called us will draw us inevitably. So all of us who have gathered here, though there would be some outer reason, but always there is an inner calling somewhere going on. And the more we learn to trust that power, the more we learn to open to that power, the more we proceed on the path of yoga. But the first thing is that appearances are deceptive. As long as we believe that whatever my senses are showing me, as long as we believe in the self-sufficiency of the intellect, we cannot begin yoga. And it's very logical. The logic is, if God could be understood by the human mind, he would be something lesser than the intellect. Very simple to understand that. The fact that he cannot be understood by the human mind, though we may write books, we may have discussions, seminars, yet the fact remains that the living experience of the divine, the living contact, is very, very different than all the books that have been written on the subject, than all that one could ever speak. We just read those wonderful lines. Than all that we could conceive. That's why it is divine. How does it help us in our everyday life? We have a notion of help, that my life, which I cherish with all its littleness and smallness, must continue now with the extra help that we have of God. So the divine is to us an add-on. He doesn't mind it. You know, he's a dangerous fellow. You open a small door, let him in. Fulfill my desires. I say, okay, come. We'll play this game. So he comes like a slave to our desires. I want this, I want that. And he says, okay. After some time, we notice that it doesn't work always. So we wonder. Our world, neat world of the divine is collapsing. He is behind it. But what to do? We are now hooked. So we continue, and after some time we do not even realize how he is occupying all our spaces within, outside. So this is how the divine works. So first thing is that the mind cannot understand that reality which is much greater. Frankly, if it was not much greater than the mind, then it's not even worth chasing, and you know, one might as well get a robo or an AI machine and get it do things for you. Why do we need the divine to do things which not that he won't do, as I said, he can do that and he does that. But that's a beginning of yoga. So what does yoga imply? Not a set of exercises, not techniques, not method. Then what does it imply? The word carries its own sense. All these ancient Sanskrit words have a very deep, profound sense which have been now disconnected. Now the moment you speak of yoga, they think that you are doing upside down posture. Well, yoga does make you go upside down, but in different ways. All our understanding of the world and self, that's what we read, goes topsy-turvy. So that's called Sirshasana. And final asana is Savasana. You say, okay, I have tried all that I could do. Now you do it. That's what is Savasana. But well, that's not what yoga is about. Yoga implies, the word means yuj, to unite. These words have such wonderful meaning. Take for example bhakti. Bhakti comes from the root bhaj. Bhaj is about joy. When you take joy in the divine, there is bhakti. It's not about how much time you're singing a hymn, praying, doing kirtan. No. We can't fool the presence. So yuja, to yoke, to unite, to join. How does it matter? It matters because without that, our life remains unfulfilled. And the proof is very evident that all of us, whether we know it or not, we are seekers. We are seeking for what? We are seeking a better life, a perfect life. We are seeking that things should become better, happier, more harmonious, more beautiful, be it world around, our own life, our relationships. Isn't it? That's what we are seeking. Why are we seeking if material reality is the sole reality? It makes no sense. Fact is that there is somewhere within us an intuition, a faith that there is something which can fulfill it. Otherwise, we have to be really fools that for ages, the moment we say matter is the only reality, then this seeking has no meaning. Logically, we should discard it. As we were taught in childhood, I do not know, things must have changed, hopefully. Man is a social animal. I don't know what they teach now. Maybe biological animal. It hit me very hard. Must be around 10 or less than 10. And I remember passing almost a sleepless night. Why? Because I am an animal. Social, but an animal nevertheless. And if I am an animal, my next logical question was, why does my mama and papa want me to behave like this and like that? I am an animal. That's what my teacher has told me. So what's wrong in just behaving like an animal? See, this is a paradox. But something within us says no. Even if we cannot change, we want others to change. Somewhere there is this dream that we are carrying. There's a very beautiful four lines in Savitri, the secret knowledge. Shobindu says, on a height he stood that looked towards greater heights. This is our state now. Man at the apex. But is he? So looks towards greater heights. Then he says, this world is a beginning and a base where mind and life construct their structured dreams. That we know. But what we do not know, he says next, an unborn power must build reality. This, see, look at the way Shobindu uses the word. Build reality. Reality is. What is meant by building reality? Because reality is not just a is, a presence. It's also a dynamic pulsation. It's creating. It's the creator. But we do not understand that, so we try to build with the power of the mind and life. That's what is given to us with the body. And it goes as far as it goes, and we know that it doesn't go very far. There comes a point when we begin to realize the limitations. We all start as dreamers, and it's very good to dream. And then we end up looking for the redeemer. Who can rescue us? So, yoga begins when we understand there is a fundamental incompleteness in our life. And it just being plain speaking, realistic in this sense, that whatever we may have, there is a kind of hollow which, Shobindu used the word inconscient, the hollow which keeps the hunger that is death. The insatiable something. So this hollow, this is a very beautiful word in Hindi. It is called abhav. Interestingly, abhav, absence. Abhav is, you can fill this sense of something missing with any amount of money, any amount of relationships, any amount of partying, any amount of whatever. But this remains unfulfilled. That's what we read those wonderful lines. That, you know, its presence, its absence made the greatest actions dull. Its presence made the smallest seem divine. It's something which is missing, the sense. The moment human beings awaken a little bit, they begin to feel that something is missing. Now we try to, you know, and this sense of missing has increased in the last maybe 60 years, post-60. The counterculture, this, that. Because we don't know. There is something we are seeking, but we don't know what we are seeking. There is something we are missing, but we don't know what we are missing. And we try to do it with the help of the mind, life, all our understanding. And yet our situation, again, as described in Savitri, man still a child in nature's mighty hands, in the succession of the moment lives. To a changing present is his narrow right. The future flees before him as he moves. His memory stares back at a phantom past. He sees imagined garments, not a face. He waits to weigh the certitude of his thoughts. He waits to save his fruits from adverse chance, all that he has done. But he knows not at last. He shall perish like the mastodon and the sloth from this earth where he was king. This is where we have reached. We don't know. Everywhere there is anguish. So this anguish is actually a feeder. It's meant to ignite the power. It is meant to remind us that, well, all that we have been doing, all the ways we have tried, there is something else. We have not yet found that magic key concealed in life's hermetic envelope. That's how Shobindu describes. Always we bear in us a magic key concealed in life's hermetic envelope. So we have not found it. So a long time we have tried. It is not a waste, because all these things help to develop at some level or the other. But the day we realize that there is something else, which we have not yet found, not yet discovered, the sense of incompleteness, and then there is the urge to join with that, which would make us complete, whole, full. That's where yoga begins. It's an aspiration, a cry, a seeking from the depths. Nobody can make us do yoga. No technique can teach us. It is there or it is not there. But yes, meetings like these, which are not meetings but yajna, so they ignite the flame. They can. Just as when we read Mother and Aurobindo's books, it can ignite suddenly a seeking. And the moment the seeking comes, aspiration comes, we are finished. We may not know anything about yoga. We may not have read big books. We may not know any asanas. We may not know how to control our breath. We may not know how to control our mind. But this aspiration carries within it the seed of all that is going to come. The ancients worshipped this as fire. We see in the Rig Veda so many hymns to the fire. It starts with that. Agni mide purohitam. That fire, lead us. What is this fire? It's the divine power in the race. Divine energy, the divine will. In the individual, this fire is in the form of a little flame. A spirit that is a flame of God abides, the psychic being in man. It carries that truth, that fire, Satyavan. So we have to find that flame. We are looking for our flame outside. My twin flame. The twin flame is here. First find here, then the other twin we may find or whatever. Often people say, I want to find my soulmate. So I say, find the soul, the mate will come. Don't try the other way round, that when I find the mate, then I will find my soul. So basically, it's yoga is a seeking, it's an aspiration. It's the core. Any practice we may do, doesn't matter. But if there is this aspiration, then it's a yoga. We are walking up and down. We may be counting 10,000 steps. It's not yoga. But we are walking the same. And we are not counting like mala, but rejoicing in ma inside. Mother's name. That's yoga. What is the act? It's the same act. It doesn't matter where you are walking. We don't have to walk in a holy place. The divine is everywhere and in everything. First fundamental lesson that Sri Aurobindo gives us. The divine is everywhere. In fact, he says, what has Sri Aurobindo come to teach us? He says, Sri Aurobindo came to teach us that one need not leave life, renounce life, or enter into limited relations with God. He is everywhere and in everything. And if we do not find him, it's because we have not taken the care to discover him. It's so true. The closer we come to the divine, we realize all these things that we tried were so absurd. So when we are on the other side, we think he is very far. Oh my God. Supramental. We are not even mental. Supramental. The word is frightening. And we speakers make it even more frightening. Oh, supermind. Beyond the human mind, there is higher mind. Illumined mind, and the person is feeling very drowsy already, and by the time he reaches the overmind, he is totally undermined. He says, this is not for me, this is too much. But that's not how it is. Once somebody was describing to me in a map, supermind is there and all. There was a map which used to circulate. I don't want to go into its antecedent, still it is there. super mind, over mind, all this, right up to subconscious. Then the person says, what do you have to say about this map? So I say, how are you trying to represent a four-dimensional thing in two dimensions? So he says, means I say supermind is there, right? But you know, supermind is also below matter in the depths. And you know, supermind is also in our heart. You want to climb the staircase, climb by all means. But there is a very simple way, the direct route, the access code. There are two access codes of the divine, but rather I would say one access code. 01. We all know that, no? 01. We are zero, God is one. Put him after us, God is one, we are zero, God is one, the value will be one. Put him before us, God is one, world is zero. It will enhance the value of life. Integral yoga is to put the divine before us. And that enhances. Whatever is our value is enhanced 10 times. Simply because. And it's not putting God before, because this is the truth we just do not know. That's the only difference. And it's very simple to understand. Look at this creation, universe. It's amazing, mind-boggling, fascinating, teeming with brilliant stars, so many dying. And we just read those magical lines, by whom all live, who lives by none. He created and blotted a million universes. What a meditation it is. Just to, you know, people say, understand Savitri, just to meditate on these lines. Blotted and created a million universes, and this is a fact we all know. But just to meditate upon these lines opens endless doors. So as long as we are satisfied with playing with the mud, we are not ready for the yoga. We are prisoners of our own concepts. We are prisoners of the senses. Mind holds the soul prisoner. We are slave to our acts. That's how Shivendra describes. When we stop playing with the mud and we start playing with the stars, then it's a religion. Gods, celestial beings above us, watching over us. And when we stop playing with the stars and we open to the sun, that's where true spiritual life or the supramental life begins. It's very easy, very simple. Shubhinda says, if you look at the aim, it's daunting. But if you look at the method, it's very simple. So simple that it's very difficult for anyone to conceive. That really, after all that is written in the Life Divine, yoga is about opening to the mother? Really? I say, yeah, that's how I also used to believe. When people told me, just open to the mother, I used to say, really? After 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, this is the truth I am more and more realizing. Yes. So how is it going to help us? First, because all that we seek, all that the mind and life seek, cannot be fulfilled individually until that missing half of the jigsaw puzzle of life enters. That's what yoga is. We are incomplete. The completeness will come when we open to that other half of the reality. This is the first thing. So we seek peace, but we try to create peace. The only peace we end up knowing is the dead man's peace. In Hindi we say, shant ho gai. Shanti koi shanti. Oh, he is at peace. That's not peace. So that's how we feel. But when we open to the divine, we experience a self-existent peace. That's what we, again, just heard in those lovely lines. Self-existent peace. It doesn't depend on any outer situation, circumstances. Don't we want it? Don't we need it? When we open to the divine, then we don't need all these so many books, information at the end of the day. Come on, this is too much. Can we know everything, knowing the divine? And Sri Aurobindo would say, yes. There is an ancient story in the Upanishads. That is how they describe Brahman. Yasmin vigyate vigyati sarvam. Knowing that, all else is known. I was just referring recently. People said, no, see, modern technology has done such a wonder. See, nowadays we are using it to transmit the Vedas, Upanishads, Gita, discussions, AI. I said, just imagine, those years who experienced these didn't even write it. They transmitted purely by memory, and still with all the AI, we are still discussing those things. Don't you see the power of that unwritten word? Literally an unwritten word. How did it survive? How did the Gita survive the, war and nobody recorded? As far as we know, Arjun was not sitting with a tape recorder. There was no podcast going on live on the battlefield. Live reporting, Arjuna and Krishna. Strange, today also we discuss the Gita? How? There is a secret which we don't know. Mind labors to know. It gets hints, but not the truth. That's why the science of appearances. That's why with all our mental knowledge, we are unable to really understand life, unable to understand consciousness, unable to understand matter, unable to understand myself. Because science tells me I am a bunch of chemicals. So I had a problem with a professor who was arguing that, this is all consciousness, all this is a blah, 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 we are nothing but chemicals. I said, no point in discussing chemical with chemical. Mr. Chemical A, what is the point of discussing with Mr. Chemical B? And what is the validity of chemicals? So you see the paradox. He got very annoyed. I said, well, sir, purpose was not to annoy you, but just a reality check. How much ever you may say that I'm a chemical, when you go back home, you don't like your wife to treat you like a chemical. You want to be someone or something. This is a paradox. It stares in our face. Still, see, so many discussions will go on. So many. At one point of time, 30 years back, I was collecting papers on consciousness. So I realized 50% are in favor. That consciousness is primary and rest is secondary. And 50% say it's an epiphenomena of the brain. So as a psychiatrist, I was that time interested. I said, it doesn't lead me anywhere. Depending on which way I look at it, let me work it out myself. This is so meaningless. Actually, somebody had given me the paper, so I was interested in going through. So this is the problem with mental knowledge. It is changing. It's informations. Well, but what is meant by the truth of things, the true knowledge? It's the stable ground, that's how it is described. That's an unchanging truth. We just heard probably the undying, that comes in the next canto. The undying truth of things appeared. When we get that, then the meaning of all this becomes clear to us. Otherwise our life remains a paradox. It helps us, our heart, one of the diseases we are suffering from. It's called loneliness. Lack of vitamin L. We don't know which store to get it. So we try from every store. Maybe this person will give me the love that I want, or need, or desire. Doesn't matter. You get it. But cars running on gas, after a while you need more, limited capacity, reliance on outside. So what happens? We want another, or in some other way, and this cannot go on. So after some time we declare, this world is all, Maya. Maya. It's a painful illusion. Once Nirodha told Sri Aurobindo, sir, I have a cold and it made me suddenly realize that the world is all Maya. It's an illusion. What sages realize after so much effort, I realized it just with a little cold. He said, yes, realizing world is Maya doesn't require anything. A cold is enough. Getting out of Maya requires the effort. So see, this whole idea we declare, it's incorrigible, a tale told by an idiot. So many things we have said. It's all. So obviously, when we have that kind of an understanding about life and God, we divide it into two. So then yoga is practiced only for individual release from moha, maya, illusion, pain, suffering, into that peace. That's a limited understanding of yoga. Shubhendu says that there are two movements of yoga. One is the contracted movement. So when yoga enters into contracted movement, then individuals practice yoga for their own salvation or for a few. But when, and he says this is the age which has started, enter into a wider movement of yoga, then you realize that when we say, oh, I will have my salvation, who is the other? See, this is called as the last illusion. So Shubhendu doesn't, because if yoga is only ultimately about individual self-realization and moksha, then we can forget about building a new world on the basis of this approach. But Shubhendu says the unborn power must build reality. That there is something. So see, the whole yoga changes. When yoga is practiced for individual salvation, then yogins withdraw from the world. Their qualification is that they lived in the Himalayas. And they practiced yoga for 10 years, learned. This is a call. I have never understood this. I mean, it's a disqualification in many ways. But look at Krishna on the battlefield. That's my image of yoga. On the battlefield, he gives the greatest scripture on karma yoga. That's the whole thing. So why we are unable to? Because the operating system of the world and the divine operating system are two different. And we cannot sync the two. Shri Krishna hints in the Gita. He says, Arjun, I'll tell you about this lower prakriti, your prakriti. It's fooling you. It has three operating systems, sattva, rajas and tamas. But there is a DOS, original divine operating system. Not the desire operating system, DOS. Then he says, I'll tell you about daivi prakriti, how I operate. He only hints because after all, you know, it's a battle. He can't give everything and he has to come back as Sri Aurobindo. He knows that this is too early to give everything. So, but he primes him and primes us that there is a divine nature and there is this nature which you are having. And there is a difference between the two. And he gives a very beautiful hint. He says this divine nature, para prakriti, acts in human by through the swabhava. There is a contact point. That contact point is the impulsion in the depths of the heart. Swabhava. It's beautiful. And then he goes on. He says, I'm not going to waste much time. He says, I'm going to come back anyways in 1800, 1872. I'll sort it out. But here, Sri Aurobindo says, now the time has come that human nature can download and be run over by the divine nature. It's not always meant to be here and there. So the whole process changes. In one, we have to withdraw from the lower nature, enter into the whatever way we want to do it, inner process, outer forest, or Greenville retreat, doesn't matter. The other is we open to the divine supernature. Allow it to invade all our fields and turn human nature into the divine nature. That's what is the whole work. His human portion, we must grow divine. His nature, we must put on as he put ours. Our life is a paradox with God for key. That's what he is telling us. And it's so simple that there is a higher nature. After all, how does the divine understand, operate? We do not fathom. That's why we cannot fathom his ways. We say, oh, this person was so good. Why did he have to suffer? Now there are so many things people have raised, all theories, karma, ultimately poor fellow. Man will say, my karma, okay, but I was made ignorant. He will say that at the end of the day. And ultimately, what does he do? He says, okay, blame it on me. And finally, he will say, but who created me? God created you. He didn't create me perfect. So just to blame all the time on man, it's because the nature is limited. When the nature is limited, we operate in a limited way. A child of two hits his mama. He sometimes says things. You are the worst mama in the world. I don't know how many mamas have never heard this. Lucky mamas. Oh, and then the same child after some time. But when the child grows up at 20, 25, if still he does it, then there is a problem. He then understands, so why my mama did the way she did. So with our limited equipment, operating system, we cannot understand the ways of the divine. Just impossible. We can make theories, fine. He enjoys, he amuses himself. Recently, Auroville, these so many issues going on, somebody said, no, Supreme Court, this has come, that has come. I said, Supreme Court doesn't decide the fate of Auroville. He said, what do you mean? I said, Supreme will decide, not the court. Courts will come and go, judges will come and go, human beings will come and go, the managing authorities and the administrators will come and go, governments will come and go, but Auroville is the dream of the divine. It will bite you, cut you from within itself until it manifests. You just can't stifle a dream which has been sown by the divine. What will happen? What time? That's a different thing altogether. So, we build theories. But when we come closer to the divine, we understand the play. Then it's so different. We realize that out of evil's bed he plucks good. That's what Shivindu writes to his wife before going to Pondicherry, one of the letters where she has lost her brother, second brother. And he says, starts very humanly that I understand, I sympathize with the tragedy that has struck your father again. Then he advises her, we have to live with trust, because very often in the world, good comes out of the soil of evil. Strange. We look at the world as evil and good. The good guys and the bad guys. We don't see that evil is good in the passing or good in the making. What was good one day, a great religion, becomes evil. It's not that it wasn't, it had its own wonderful thing. Its core is still probably, but it becomes evil because time has come to discard and something new to come. And there are things which are evil. In every karna there is a possible potential Arjuna waiting to be born. So that's how we are always seeing this world as a struggle of dualities. But when we look at the divine, he is constantly extracting good out of evil. Strange it is. That's how the world is advancing. And the power that does it, the divine operating system, that is the supermind. Supermind is the divine truth consciousness with which he acts in the world. You cannot deceive it. It's the omnipotence and omniscience of the divine. That's all it is. If you don't go into too many definitions, it is the divine operating system. Vidyamai Maya, where he understands the law of oneness, the oneness and the law of diversity, both are understood and known. That's how the divine can deal with each one differently. He doesn't give us a standardized technique. All of us will come today, hold your breath, count till 12. Sometimes we all do such silly things. 12 times you will chant Om. Sorry, but mother describes once when somebody came to in one of our meetings in Paris, and she says that the person who had come chanted Om. Immediately she saw that the room is filled with the divine presence. Now this is where we have to develop. Again we turn it into a ritual, something mechanical. Close your eyes and sit for meditation is another ritual. Very often opening eye meditation is easier because you are seeing what you are seeing. Close your eyes, you are seeing your own ghosts. Your own jinns rise up from within and your mind is carried in all kinds of things. That's how Amal Kiran used to sit when mother is giving meditation, and he would open her eyes and look at her. Sometimes he would make sketches and even give comments below the sketches, like Puraniji wrestler with a short neck would suddenly be lolling like this, and he made a sketch of Puraniji and wrote below, undermined by the supermind. And someone asked, why don't you close your eyes? He says, oh, Divine Mother is sitting in front of me, you want me to close the eyes? How silly. So this is how, it's not a set of techniques, rules, everybody will do the same thing. Supermind doesn't work like that. There is no one way to do Aurobindo's yoga. There is a fundamental truth which is opening to the mother. That's there. Why? Because she holds that truth and gives to each one according to their need. That's the whole idea. Why mother? Because mother knows which child needs what. If you try to contact the supermind and suddenly pull it down, then likely all our fuses will go away, because we don't know. We don't know what material our wires are made up of. But when we turn to the mother, she'll give us what is needed, how much is needed, how much volt he can bear. And if we cannot, she'll gradually prepare us. That's why the mother. It's not because it's a religion or a cult. This is a basic misunderstanding. Why mother is so much Aurobindo speaks of? Because if you try to do it, I am going to bring down the higher consciousness. Most likely, your mind will give a big trip. You'll see images and say, ah, I had a wonderful experience. Maybe the vital will say, you know, you are God. Soham Asmi. I have met a person and the son told me, you please treat him. I said, what do I treat? What is the problem? I met him. Everything seems normal. He said, no, you don't know. He doesn't listen to anyone. I said, why? Because he says, I am supreme. I said, this is fantastic. I said, why you want to shake his nice, neat belief? Let him believe. He said, I know. I said, you know, I know. But it's okay. He is living in his own. So I interacted with him. I am supreme. You can't challenge that. Because the mind is always giving a reason. So it's not about suddenly having a hallelujah experience, sitting in some kind of... No, it's opening to the mother, and the mother takes us step by step. Because she is the mother, she knows us. So simple. And she'll take us step by step. And wherever each one is, somebody standing on, you know, this, if you conceive it as a huge ocean through which, or a mountain through which we have to move. Somebody is just dreaming of the mountain. He has not even seen the foothills. Mother will take him to the foothill first. Somebody is standing on the foothills. She will take him from there further. Somebody is gazing at the Mount Everest. but is not summoning her the courage to climb. She will take him from there. So there is no standard format of this yoga. Standard formats belong to religions of old. So many times in a day you must remember God. By default it means forget him the rest of the time. Why? So silly it is, but yes, that's how it is. And after you have done, you have paid your debt to God. Now he better does everything for me. I have done what he expected me to do. Whereas supramental yoga doesn't go according to any one standard format. That's why it is collective yoga. It's not collective yoga in the sense that everybody sits together and everybody does the same thing. Everybody wears the same dress for God's sake. Does the same chanting. No. See, it's so amazing to see at the samadhi of Sri Aurobindo and the mother in the ashram. Some people will go and stand like this, looking very meaningfully at everything that is going around, forming their own judgments. Some will go and they'll just fall at the samadhi. Some will go around, some will light an agarbatti. Somebody will offer a flower. Somebody will just sit nearby and meditate. So many ways. Somebody will hold the samadhi in their heart. All of this, and all of the above and none of the above. So supramental yoga is like that. How does it propose to change humanity? So as we have said till now, the world was divided into these two. There is this lower creation. And its operating system is flawed. You just can't help it. You can tinker with it, do whatever. But this is flawed. You cannot change it beyond a point. You have to live with it. You have to keep changing the equipment. That's how it is. But there is apparently some higher system, but you can't connect with that. You can use it to pass away. Now Sri Aurobindo has established, that's what establishing the supramental consciousness, a new, that is the divine consciousness, if you want to put it very simply, was always there in the world, but acting from behind, veiled by the ego, and was pushing humanity through the ego, giving it the freedom to have its own experiences. And in the process, humanity bungled and then went into crisis. When it went into crisis, the divine came to the forefront as the avatar, led it one step further. That's how it was going. Now it is in the forefront. So when the divine consciousness is in the forefront, then ego has no place. It creates challenges and difficulties. So now the more one believes one is, you know, these biodata cards and all these lose their meaning. It's a big problem. Because that's very difficult. Mind is a very big difficulty because the mental ego. I know, I am someone, I am something. Ashram, this is stripped immediately. You go to the ashram entry, you are thinking I am somebody from somewhere and Mr. Someone. Suddenly the man at the gate will say, go. He's not even acknowledging your august presence. Or he may point out, chappals, forgotten. Sir, I am someone so and so. I don't care, I am not interested. they should be more decent in dealing, that's different. But point is that this is how. Now we have such lovely people, of course. But what I mean is that this is how ego and the divine cannot go together. Divine is not there to fulfill my egoistic life of ambitions and desire. That relation is old world. Divine is here to smash the ego, pulverize, make a big khichdi of the desires, cook it in his divine will with tadka of divine love, and then he gives it to us. And so this is so tasty. I didn't know this is much tastier than the desires. What have you made it? Your desires, I made it. How? I pulverize them, cook them. Oh, this is something so nice. Do the same with the rest of my desires. So this is the difference. The old world relation with God was that He is there to strengthen my life of my ego and desire. The new relation is that he has to replace the ego, put desire aside, and in its place fill us with his love, his light, his peace, his ananda, his wisdom, his truth. And then what will be the need of anything else? And this is what is happening in the world. And more human beings, knowingly or unknowingly, they are slowly getting influenced and affected by this new consciousness, this new power. It's called new. Supermind is the ancient of the ancient. But it's called new because it's new to earth. It has never been in the forefront. So it is established now. And it's gradually changing our systems. Which systems? Not organizations. Our inner system. How? That last bit. We don't see the governments change. Or even when they change, we see that we are only replacing one ghost with another. No, that's not how the divine operates. He changes children. Always he has done this. From the time of King Nero, what was his name? Nero. To Kansa, everywhere, he changes the child. So the children who are going to come, automatically, they are going to be like little baby Prahlad from Indian. They are going to tell their Hiranyakashipu father, "Dad, okay, I respect you, huh? But that doesn't mean that I'll listen to everything you say. You may be wrong." Now you see, this is a new game plan. Why? Because they are coming with their new model. And right now we may not understand them. And they also don't understand. They don't know all this terminology. But it's a beginning of a revolutionary change. It's just the beginning. And as more and more this consciousness grows and more children embody it, they begin to live in a wider consciousness, even outside events, and a new spiritual evolution will proceed. It's already started, it's begun. And that is the solution for the world problems that Sri Aurobindo proposes. If man, to put it in the end in a form of an equation, if man remains what he is, with his mind, vital ego and ambition, then whatever system, organization and anything you may make, it is going to collapse. That's what very intuitively Youth Hunt, the Secretary General of UNO, once spoke in 1960s. I think he was inspired. If we need to change man, it's time that we did it. He didn't know what he's speaking. Sometimes we utter words whose full significance we don't realize. Unfortunately, and no one listened. Because if man remains what he is, then there is no hope. There is hope for individual. Individual's problem has been solved. He can withdraw from the world. But if the consciousness changes, if man changes, then doesn't matter. You give to an expert, master, musician, anything. You give to Shiva Damaru. He will bring languages and music out of it. And you give to an ignoramus, nice sitar, he'll in all likelihood snap the strings. So this is the process of spiritual revolution, evolution going on. And it does not depend on human beings anymore because that force is working. And it's gathering more and more speed. The question is, how many of us are ready to jump into this supramental ship? The same story like Noah's Ark. How many of us are ready? It requires faith. It requires courage. And if we have that, that is enough. All that is required is faith that, okay, fine, we trust. And then the rest of the journey unfolds. But if we don't have, we keep calculating, we are on the shore, no, at least a known devil is better than an unknown good. If we think about that, then we are left behind because it's advancing at a very, very fast speed. I think the rest of the days we'll talk more and more about it. So, okay. Thank you so much, Jema.